Oyez, oyez, oyez. A person's having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court. Be seated, please. Case number 09-5352, St. Luke's Hospital Appellant versus Kathleen Sebelius, Secretary of Health and Human Services. Mr. Mazur for appellant, Mr. McElvain for appellee.
May it please the court, I'm Robert Mazur, representing St. Luke's Hospital, successor in interest to Allentown Osteopathic Medical Center. This case involves a Medicare claim for a loss incurred by Allentown when it merged into St. Luke's Hospital, effective January 1, 1997. The administrator for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services disallowed the loss. Its determination was based on a program memorandum that had been issued by the agency in October 2000 and which required statutory mergers to be bona fide sales. The CMS administrator ruled that this particular statutory merger did not qualify as a statutory merger because the consideration that Allentown received, which was the assumption of its liabilities and obligations by St. Luke's, a surviving entity, was not sufficient consideration for the transaction to be inadequate, for the transaction to be a bona fide sale. We cite in our briefs a number of reasons why the program memorandum is invalid for both procedural reasons and substantive issues. With the court's permission, we'd like to focus on the substantive issues, and in particular, two interpretations in the program memorandum which we believe are invalid. The first of which is that statutory mergers must qualify as bona fide sales. The second of which is that a bona fide sale requires reasonable consideration. We believe there are particularly compelling reasons to reject those interpretations. And the first compelling reason is the history and the background of the program memorandum. The program memorandum was issued after the agency had received warnings from its Office of Inspector General that hospitals were losing money on change of ownership transactions, and that instead of permitting Medicare to recoup depreciation payments as in the past based on gains, these transactions in which the providers were incurring losses would require Medicare to make additional payments to those providers under its Medicare regulations. The agency responded in two ways. First, it petitioned Congress to change the Medicare statute and remove the statutory provision which required the Secretary to reimburse gains and losses based on the policies that had been in effect on June 1, 1984. This permitted the agency to amend its regulations to eliminate recognition of all gains and losses effective December 1, 1997. The second step was the program memorandum. The program memorandum was intended to address transactions that occurred prior to December 1, 1997 and would not be affected by the regulatory amendment. But the impact of the program memorandum was the exact same impact as the regulatory amendment had for later transactions. Each of the 20 cases in which the agency has reviewed a loss on statutory merger or consolidation claim under the terms of the program memorandum has found that the program memorandum requirements were not satisfied and disallowed the loss. So effectively, it disallowed the loss claim for transactions occurring prior to December 1, 1997, just as the regulatory amendment had required for transactions that occurred after December 1, 1997. The program memorandum was issued, as I said, 3 years after the transaction, and in fact, it was issued in 2000 when gains and loss transactions had been eliminated effective December 1, 1997. So it applied only retrospectively, and the rules, the guidelines, the requirements of the program memorandum were not issued by the agency until completion of all transactions that could generate a claim for a gain or a loss under the Medicare regulations. In the Drake versus Federal Aviation Administration case, this court indicated that an agency interpretation of its regulations was not entitled to deference when there's reason to suspect that the agency's interpretation was not its fair and considered judgment. This court also indicated in the Water Ubazo Hospital that when an agency's interpretation is based on the monetary impact of the Medicare program. That agency interpretation is arbitrary and capricious.
Can I interrupt for a second? Is your position that mergers aren't covered by the bona fide sale provision at all? Is that right?
That is correct. Our position is that the regulations require recognition of a gain or loss.
Where does that come from? If they're not sales, if they're not mergers, if they're not covered, how do you get the extra recognition that you want?
The regulation addressing statutory merger says that in the case of a statutory merger between unrelated parties, a gain or loss is recognized under the Section F of the Medicare regulations.
So you do have to get to F, right?
We do have to get to F.
Okay, and one of the provisions of F is F2.
That is correct, Your Honor.
So what makes you think F2 isn't one of the provisions of F that you have to get to?
What the agency intended was to say that it is subject to the general provisions.
How do you know what the agency intended?
Well, we do, have testimony of the individual who was in charge of the regulations
development. This is after the fact, somebody who testified on your behalf, right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
What if the notice of proposed rulemaking that announced, why don't you look at that, announced L in the first place? Why isn't that the place to look for the whether or not mergers were covered?
There's nothing in the preamble to the statutory merger regulation that in any way indicates that a statutory merger has to satisfy the requirements of a bona fide sale.
Well, is there anything in it that suggests that a statutory merger is treated as a sale of assets?
It's not per se. It just says.
Let me read you from the notice of proposed rulemaking, which established Part L in 1977. Quote, a second provision of the proposed amendment, L2, points out that a statutory merger is treated as a sale of assets.
What I believe that was intended, Your Honor, was there was a controversy as to sale of stock versus sale of assets. And there was cases on that, including Ritchie Manor and some other cases from this court, in which the court indicated that when people tried to have a purchase of stock treated as a purchase of assets, and the Medicare program was very clear that there's a difference between a sale of assets and a sale of stock. In a sale of assets, there was an actual change of ownership.
But none of what you're saying to me is in the notice of proposed rulemaking. The notice says that the purpose of L2 is to show that a statutory merger is treated as a sale of assets. And that's exactly what you're saying is not the case.
Well, when that notice of program, when that proposed rule came out in 1977, the regulations did not even include a provision for bona fide sales. F2 did not exist until a month before, until January 1979. So what they were trying to say is that it's treated as a sale of assets in that it would provide for revaluation and it would provide for recognition of gain or loss, as opposed to a transaction that was treated as a sale of stock, which would not be would give rise to a gain or loss or revaluation of assets. At the time that the regulation was developed, hospitals were being sold for more than the original owner had paid. And providers were coming and saying, we would like to be paid, the new owners, on a revaluation, a higher basis than the previous owner had been reimbursed for. And the agency essentially took that position and decided that a statutory merger between unrelated parties would provide a better revaluation, a better valuation of assets and appreciated value than the basis that the previous owner had been used.
Under your reading, two nonprofits get together and merge, and intentionally, there's a memo, for example, that says we are intentionally undervaluing the assets in order to get a higher depreciation. That's our purpose. This is a sham. Under those circumstances, what do you think the rule should be? What do you think? What is the rule under your interpretation? Medicare has to pay?
Well, Medicare relies on the fact that it was two unrelated.
Well, they are unrelated, but they know that if, you know, there's two, and I'm not saying this in the sense that they're trying to personally profit. You have two hospitals. They would like to continue service. They know that if they intentionally undervalue the assets of one of them, they will get a large extra depreciation from Medicare. They intend to use that in a very good way to provide more services, maybe also to increase the salaries of the administrators. And they write a memo that says, the purpose of this is, the only reason we're doing this is to get more money out of Medicare. Is your view that there is no provision of the regulations which covers that at all, which prevents that from happening, because they are unrelated?
The regulatory preamble provides for recognition of gains or loss on a bona fide transaction.
Ah, so you agree it does have to be bona fide.
I agree that it has to be bona fide, but I do not agree that bona fide carries with it all of the things that the Secretary says.
Well, you did actually, you had two arguments, I understood. One was it didn't have to be bona fide at all, and then second, you didn't like the interpretation of bona fide as meaning reasonable compensation, right?
Not quite, Your Honor. The idea was it did not have to be a bona fide sale.
Right.
Because it was not a sale.
But there's a bona fide requirement somewhere else that's not in the sale regulation?
The preamble to the 1979 statutory regulation requires that it be a bona fide transaction. The parties in this case stipulated at the administrative hearing that this was a bona fide transaction. That's what the regulatory preamble required.
What does bona fide mean? But I thought your view, though, is bona fide means nothing other than that they're unrelated, right?
And in good faith, not a sham. A bona fide.
Where does that part come from, the good faith and not a sham? Is that in a regulation?
It is in the general definition of bona fide.
So you agree then that using the words bona fide, even though those are the only words, the agency is allowed to interpret those words further and beyond merely that the parties be unrelated.
I don't believe that the agency can interpret bona fide to mean something other than its common meaning, at least going through notice and comment rulemaking. Or
the question is, what is its common meaning? You at least agree that that there couldn't be a memo that says this is a sham, right? You at least agree that.
It's not a sham. A sham would not be a bona fide transaction.
Right. And what if there was a memo saying we are intentionally undervaluing the assets for the purpose of getting larger depreciation? That's all. It doesn't say this is a sham. I'll make my hypothetical a little bit less outrageous. All it says is we are intentionally undervaluing the assets in order to get more depreciation difference paid to us by Medicare.
But that is not possible, Your Honor, under a statutory merger. The statutory...
If it's not possible, then your argument isn't that there's something wrong with the reasonable consideration requirement. It's just that this will never happen and didn't happen in this case.
In the case of a statutory merger, the consideration that the merged entity receives is controlled by law. It's not a negotiated amount. The consideration that Allentown received was relief from all of its liabilities and obligations. That's just a matter of law under corporate law. It's not something that the parties agreed on.
So then your argument is just that, well, we did pay reasonable consideration, right? Is that what your argument reduces to?
The argument is that the statutory merger requires just a recognition of a gain or loss on a transaction between unrelated parties.
Even if it's unreasonable? Even if the consideration's unreasonable?
Even if two parties enter into a transaction which they believe is reasonable, it's not for the agency to say, I don't care what the two parties, whether they believed it was a reasonable transaction or not. We take the position that it is
unreasonable. Now you will at least add on to language that doesn't use those words the requirement that the parties believe it to be unreasonable, or to be it reasonable, right?
Well, the parties entered into the transaction, two unrelated parties entered into the transaction, and they've got different interests. They've got competing interests.
I understand, but there's two different ways to think about this. One is to say that the fact of unrelatedness automatically makes it reasonable, and another is to permit some inquiry as to whether it is unreasonable. I take it from what you're telling me, you are willing to permit inquiry into subjective motivation of the parties as to what they really believed. Is that right?
Not regarding the reasonableness of the transaction, but whether the transaction was a sham, good faith transaction. And I think
the
most...
It could be an unreasonable good faith non-sham transaction.
It could be a reasonable transaction, although the in the party's view, although someone else would think that the particular consideration may not be adequate.
Am I correct that your burden here is to show that the agency's interpretation of its own regulation was plainly erroneous?
No, I don't think that is the case, Your Honor. I think because the Deficit Reduction Act of 1984 required that the Secretary to continue to reimburse transactions based on the policies that were in effect on June 1, 1984. And I think that the agencies, if the agency's determination is not consistent with those principles, irrespective of whether it was a good interpretation or a bad interpretation, of those regulations, I think it's an invalid interpretation.
That statutory language, doesn't that require us to give Chevron deference to the agency's determination of what its policies were as of 1984?
I don't think this is a matter of statutory construction that's entitled to Chevron deference. And I also, there was no determination by the agency that said this was our policy. And as of January 1, 1984, the agency and the Secretary's briefs virtually ignore that provision that required the agency to reimburse costs based on the reimburse losses based on the policies in effect on June 1, 1984. And if I could make one final point, which I think is key, is that the parties to the administrative hearing stipulated that not only was this a transaction between unrelated parties, but that this was a bona fide transaction. They stipulated that. There's no basis for saying that a bona fide, when it precedes transaction, means something different than when it precedes sale. So if, in fact, as the Secretary would have it, a statutory merger is considered a sale, it's clearly a bona fide sale based on the party stipulation that it was a bona fide transaction.
Thank you, Mr. Mazur.
May it please the court, my name is Joel McElvain, appearing on behalf of the appellee, Kathleen Sebelius. This case calls for nothing more than a straightforward application of the Medicare regulation governing depreciation. Section 413.134L tells us that in the case of a merger of providers, if it's a merger of unrelated parties and the merging party was a provider, then it is subject to the provisions of paragraph F to govern realization of gains or losses. When you turn to paragraph F, that tells you one particular application within that paragraph is that subsection F2, a bona fide sale may result in the realization of a gain or a loss.
Other transactions counsel not. Whether there was any way in which they could benefit by the reconstruction of what their actual depreciation was if F2 didn't apply. And he said that, yes, they would still get to change the gains. Is that correct? Is there any way, is there any other provision other than F2 which would give them the benefit that they want?
They can realize a gain through a scrapping or a theft or casualty loss, but none of those other possibilities. Realize a gain or a loss.
Nothing else would apply in this case.
Nothing else would apply in this case. It has to be a bona fide sale or
your
nothing.
Your position is that if they were to win, that F2 doesn't apply, they would lose because they would not be able to get the loss that they want.
Right. Paragraph L tells you have to look at paragraph F to govern gains or losses. Gains or losses, the only provision that even possibly could apply that would allow a gain or a loss is the bona fide sale provision. So what this comes down to is, was this a bona fide sale? And the definition of a bona fide sale is an arm's length transaction between unrelated parties, each side negotiating in their own interest and arriving at reasonable consideration.
What about the stipulation Mr. Mazur mentioned?
He's referring to a stipulation that this was a bona fide transaction, not a bona fide sale. And the merger certainly did really occur. That's not in dispute at all. And the parties have legitimate reasons to merge, we can assume. That's not a relevant issue at all. But the question is, was this a bona fide sale where the parties really were negotiating, trying to arrive at real value? That sort of real value sort of negotiation could allow you to make a determination of what the real value of the assets were and whether they had departed from the depreciation schedule that Medicare had already allowed. And the transaction was simply nothing like that. And that's why the bona fide sale provision does not apply. The record informs us that the motivations of Allentown were not to gain fair value. They never attempted to sell the assets. They never attempted to determine the value of the assets before selling. Instead, their primary motivations were to continue to participate in the management of the hospital, which is what the merger agreement allowed them to do.
Make a determination about motivation here?
Well, for an arm's length transaction, one thing that you would look to is what were they trying to do? Were they trying to gain fair value, or were they motivated by other factors?
I thought the basis of the decision here was kind of objective analysis that the consideration wasn't reasonable. Judge Ginsburg's questions and your answer suggests you were trying to get something else here. Is that right?
The definition of a bona fide sale is, one, that it's for reasonable consideration, so that's an objective determination. But also it needs to be an arm's length transaction where the parties are negotiating in their own self-interest. So that additional element would require you to look at what were the parties trying to do. Allentown here was not trying to gain fair consideration. They did not care what the supposed sale price was or not. They were motivated by other factors. They wanted to benefit the continued operations of the hospital going forward. They wanted to continue to participate in the hospital. But those were not motivations that led them to negotiate for a fair price. And because the secretary's obligation in these cases is to reimburse the provider only for their actual and reasonably incurred costs, this simply is not the kind of transaction that would allow any determination of what their real costs, real losses may have been, as opposed to a paper loss purely for record-keeping purposes.
Suppose that the officers were going to depart the company, had no continuing stake in it. Would it make any difference to your argument?
That would be a different case. I mean, you can imagine a circumstance where the officers or the directors are going to leave. They're going to be completely divorced from further participation.
I thought your argument,
and all that they're motivated by. I'm sorry.
I thought your argument in the brief was, at least in part, that the quantity attributed here to the value of the assets had bore no relationship to the assets at all.
Correct. There are two primary aspects of the bona fide sale analysis. One is there has to be reasonable consideration, which there wasn't here at all. It also has to be an arm's length transaction where the parties really are trying to negotiate for consideration. So in the hypothetical that you posed, that second element could be satisfied. You still have to get to the reasonable consideration issue as well. Both elements are lacking here. So very definitely substantial evidence supports the administrator's finding that there was no bona fide sale here.
So the subjective determination wasn't really necessary to your argument?
No. I mean, neither element was necessary here, and we can focus on reasonable consideration. There was far, far, far short of reasonable consideration here, given that the supposed value of the exchange, the assumption of their liabilities, was less even than the value of their current and monetary assets, let alone all of their assets.
Can a statutory merger ever satisfy the requirements of the reg?
I'm sorry, could you repeat?
Could a statutory merger ever satisfy your requirements?
Certainly. Going back to the hypothetical you had before, if a party really is giving up the hospital, giving up the asset, and divorcing themselves from further control of it, and they're motivated to gain fair value, they negotiate a price, they want the high price, the buyer wants the low price, they meet in the middle, it's a true negotiation, and they walk away, then you would have an arm's length transaction for reasonable consideration. That would be a bona fide sale. And if they structure that as a merger, then so be it, the same rule would apply, the formalities between a merger and a sale.
There still has to be an allocation of the consideration.
Yes. Right,
between the depreciable property and the rest of the assets.
Yes, that's correct.
And that's going to be, well, I guess it's not it's not beyond the realm of some bounds. But I mean, that at least in this case, looks like it's entirely arbitrary.
It was arbitrary how the provider treated it, or
the allocation of the proceeds.
Yes.
I mean, I think you made this point in your brief, that there were current assets, there were monetary equivalents, there were depreciable property, and so on, and that there was no rationale for the allocation that was made here.
Right. If in a case like this, where a provider says, we're just going to merge and we don't care what the value is of what we're giving up or what we're getting, we're just merging and letting the chips fall where they may, it would be entirely accidental if there was any relationship between.
That would be equally true if it was a hard bargained agreement, wouldn't it?
Well, no, in a hard bargained agreement, even in a case where there's where it's structured as a merger, you would expect the parties to negotiate, and there would be some additional value exchanged along with the merger to true up the values so that each side feels that they've gotten a fair exchange for a fair value.
So the seller would take an interest in the buyer's allocation of the proceeds?
No, you would. The example I have in mind is the parties merge, the merging party walks away, and the party that's receiving, that's continuing an entity, continuing in existence after the merger, would kick some additional money to the party that's walking away, if that's what the a fair value would be, if that's what the negotiations result. Certainly. You could imagine a nonprofit organization that has two subsidiaries. They want to get rid of one of their subsidiaries. They either sell that subsidiary or they structure it as a merger. They get fair value, and they use that fair value to operate their other subsidiary. Mm-hmm. It's much easier. It's much more likely to happen in the for-profit context. I imagine that it would be rare for it not to happen in the for-profit context, but it certainly can happen in the nonprofit context as well. So, again, the regulations, the clear application of subsection L and subsection F require a merger to be a bona fide sale, and a bona fide sale requires an arm's length transaction for reasonable consideration. Substantial evidence easily supports the administrator's finding here that there was no bona fide sale. There was nothing even remotely approaching reasonable consideration here. There was no arm's length transaction. Allentown was not motivated in any way whatsoever to attempt to gain fair value. I'd be happy to answer additional questions.
When you stipulated that this was a bona fide, what, transaction? Was that the term?
That was the stipulation before the board, yes.
Was that in a context where it was clear that you were reserving the issue of whether it was a bona fide sale?
I think the stipulation just says that it was a bona fide transaction. There's no reference at all to bona fide sale. And bona fide sale was that issue. That was the main.
That's what I mean. Before and after the stipulation, you were making this point or not? That it was not a bona fide sale based on the consideration.
Yes. I mean, a bona fide transaction, whatever that may have meant to the parties stipulating, is not a bona fide sale. The merger itself was bona fide. The merger itself was not a sham. They had perfectly legitimate reasons to enter into the merger. That's not the same thing as saying that it was a bona fide sale for the purpose of the regulations. Okay. If there are no further questions, I would ask that the decision be affirmed. Thank you.
Mr. Mazur, I don't think you had any time, but we'll give you a minute for rebuttal.
Yes, thank you very much.
If you want it, if you need it.
I would like that 1 minute. Thank you. When the agency provided the statutory merger regulation, providers were having gains on those transactions. They were seeking revaluation of assets, and the Medicare program indicated that we would allow you to revalue those assets upward. But if we're going to revalue and recompute the depreciation for purposes after the transaction, we're going to recompute the depreciation for that we had paid prior to the transaction. That's why they provided that in those statutory mergers between unrelated parties, they would be subject to paragraph F. What that meant was, if we're going to give a revaluation, then we're going to recompute the depreciation, and the merging entity was going to have to pay back depreciation because it didn't occur as much as was reimbursed. No suggestion it had to be a bona fide sale. And in fact, the last thing that the agency wanted to do was create another requirement that would have to be satisfied before they could recoup the depreciation resulting from the gain.
Point me to the words that would indicate you would have the benefit of the recalculation if there weren't a sale at all?
The words are in the statutory merger regulation itself that says, I'm not sure I understood the question, Your Honor.
Well, I had asked both you and your opponent the question of, if this wasn't covered by F2, what is it covered by that gives you the benefit of the recalculation of the depreciation?
The regulation, statutory merger between unrelated parties, says
which regulation, so I can look at it.
That is L2I, and
Right, and isn't that the one that says, if the merged corporation was a provider before the merger, then it is subject to the provisions of paragraphs D, 3, and F?
Yes.
Concerning recovery, right?
And in our view, what it means with the F is that a statutory merger is essentially placed in F1, which lists the various types of transactions where Medicare recognizes gains and losses on disposable assets. You know, it says depreciable assets may be disposed of through sale, scrapping, trading, et cetera, et cetera. The provision in L effectively puts statutory merger regulations right in that provision of F1 and says it's added to the list of transactions for which Medicare will recognize a gain or loss. It does not say that if it satisfies any of the existing F2 or whatever, it just says it's subject to F, which means, in our view, that it's placed in there as if it had been expressly added to that F1 as a transaction that would recognize gain or loss in an appropriate case.
You would agree that's an arguable interpretation, isn't it? That's not clear on its face.
I would agree that that's the way that the agency has interpreted it as of 1984.
I appreciate that, but leaving that aside, just for the moment, the question of on the face of the language, the interpretation that you're giving, that it falls under F1, is not one that is plain on the face of the statute of the regulation, is it?
I believe, based on all the totality of circumstances, it is plain. I believe that it is not a reasonable reading of the statutory merger regulation to say that, in fact, it has to satisfy one of the F2 through F5 in order for the gain or loss on statutory merger.
When would F2 ever apply?
F2 would apply if there was a sale of assets. Instead of a statutory merger, I sell to you my hospital and you write me a check for $10 million. That is a sale of assets. That's what bona fide sale was intended to.
So you're saying F2 applies only to sale?
Sales of assets, correct.
Where is the word merger in F1?
I think that it is effectively put there by Section L.
But what words in F1 put merger there that don't put it under F2?
There is no express.
The word merger isn't used in either F1 or F2.
That is correct.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you very much.
Case is submitted. Thank you both.